Welcome back to the Inside the Cross Pro Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Kyle Devitt, the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside the Cross, and today I'm joined by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside the Cross freelance contributor and pro lacrosse analyst.
Yes, analyst being the operative word this week, as Chris will break down Major League Lacrosse's All-Star Game, which took place at Navy Marine Corps Stadium this past Saturday. Chris, tell me all about it.
All right, well, let's kick it off by just saying I'm probably going to erase all of the X and O sort of stuff because it is, in fact, an All-Star Game. It is the bowl of candy of professional sporting events. So we can just go with entertainment, and that's what this was. So Saturday night, Annapolis, Maryland, Team Ice 16, Team Fire 15, overtime victory. Dylan Malloy is your MVP, takes home the big old jumbo check with 5 goals and an assist in the losing effort. Nico Amato had 11 saves in the second half for Team Ice, the victorious Team Ice. Most of the MLL stars you know and love balled out of their minds. You know, you had Lyle Thompson, John Grant Jr., all those gentlemen. And Joe Beninati in the booth, Quint on the field doing color and doing player interviews and, you know, talking to various other members of the community, and this is a big event. Had a bunch of old timers, I guess is the best way to put it, coming back to help coach, like Brian Reese and Paul Cantabene, in addition to, you know, the current coaches who helped out. So yeah, it's a big festivity. You know, that's how they do All-Star games. Let's talk about a couple elements of the game, you know, aside from the actual play. Let's start with the uniforms. Personally, I liked the attention paid to the gear and the uniforms. Fire and Ice, they kind of went, if you haven't seen them, you check them out, I'm sure, all over, you know, any sort of social media avenues. Fire was, you know, the red. Ice was the dark blue, kind of both had a sort of digicamo addition to it. They're in Maryland, so they tossed down a tiny little crab on the back of the jersey. I think that's a good sort of touch, like they do for Olympics or international play. You add something to represent your host city, which I think is a great touch. Also represent the helmets were kind of chromed out red or dark blue, I guess it was, but they had like decals that represented the teams that the players played for, you know, their sort of home markets or whatever. Same helmets, just, you know, individual decals. Thought that was another good touch. Kyle, thoughts on the uniform stuff? Were you pro or against?
If it were 2012, those uniforms would have been fire, but it's not. The helmets were great. I thought the unis were very 2009 to 2012-ish. But that's only because I'm hypercritical of gear stuff because I'm a gear guy. But the helmets being chromed out with the whiteout decals of the team that the player who's wearing the helmet is from, like, that is great. Like, they should do that all the time. I believe the last time they did that was when they played Team USA in 2014. And that was really cool. Those helmets were all, like, more of a black iridescent kind of decal on those. But, yeah, I mean, Fire and Ice, I mean, you know, Game of Thrones is over. I don't know. It would have been cooler last year, I guess, before this season ruined everything. But yeah, it was fine. If you're asking me which one is better, MLL unis or PLL unis, I honestly wasn't really a fan of either one. But if I had to choose one of the four options, the black tie-dye was cool. Because I wasn't expecting it, and I haven't seen that. But I've seen all the other stuff before. Team names as well, you know, whatever. It's fine. What did you think of halftime plan / lack of halftime?
Personally, I didn't miss... So they got rid of the skills competition stuff, and I didn't miss it at all. I thought if you had to have it, like the PLL did, having it after the game is probably the right idea. Or you know, I don't think lacrosse is at a point now where you can really expect an audience to, you know, to show up a different night, like say the NBA does for their skills stuff. So if you do want to have it, then, you know, have it after, or, you know, have it way before or something like that. Putting it halftime, in hindsight, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. You take away a lot of the variables. You just take a lot of things out of your hands. You know, how long is somebody's, you know, freestyle trick going to take? You know, are they going to be able to put it on TV if you've got a guy who's, you know, going to dance through the crowd or something like that? It's too much to work with, and it doesn't really pay off, in my opinion. And also, like, as far as just the fastest shot competition goes, unless they have a guy who shoots 116, you know, unless you know you've got like, a ringer who's going to beat Jared Newman, there's just no point. You're just going to open it up. If somebody shoots 114 miles an hour, which is an ungodly speed to shoot a lacrosse ball, still, you're going to have people on the internet acting like he's shooting at 35 or something like that.
Right.
So, like, don't bother doing that to yourself. And speed contest is the only thing anybody talks about 10 seconds after it's over. So I'm totally fine with them getting rid of all of it. Now, that being said, their halftime was a feature on Lyle Thompson, kind of like where he comes from and, you know, growing up and, you know, just learning more about him. And then Quint did an interview with someone, the governor or lieutenant governor. I'm not sure. I don't remember. I'm surprised they didn't go with something like more of a highlight package. Here's the best plays from the first half of the year, you know, something that, or something that can showcase their players maybe individually a little bit more. You know, if you're just watching it for the first time, you know, maybe you can learn, you know, what these guys do, you know, with their respective teams, what these guys are good at other than just this one game. And I think that's kind of a theme that carried throughout the whole night. Like, if you're a casual fan and you happen to be watching ESPN2, I don't think you have any better an idea today where to see more of these games or about where to see some of these individual players. So I think they kind of could have cashed in a little bit more on that. But I am, like I said, I'm okay with them getting rid of the halftime skill stuff.
Yeah. It didn't bother me. I didn't watch anything during halftime because there was a PLL game going on, and I just went back and watched that instead. I'm going to be real. And then I tuned back when All-Star Game was back, and then I watched the rest of that other PLL game later. So I was fine with it. You have a note here about the Navy Admiral, who, by the way, when I was watching it, I went, I don't think that's an Admiral. I think that's like a Captain. Man, they couldn't even get an Admiral. And then he said he was an Admiral, and I was like, oh. See, now I reverse impressed myself. Or they reverse impressed me. So I like that. I know it is weird, but, you know, you're a Navy Marine Corps stadium, man. That's, you're going to get some sort of presence. Clearly too late to do, like, a flyby or anything. They're not going to land a Blackhawk in the middle of the field. Maybe they should have, but they didn't. So that's probably the next best thing, right?
Yeah, I wish there was more of a context to it. I mean,
yeah, there was no context. You're absolutely right. Yes.
Right. They kind of said, so if you didn't watch it, there's this, you know, they brought an admiral who I guess had just begun, you know, that day or the previous day, working, you know, at the Navy Marine Corps facility. And, you know, Joe Ben and I just kind of interviewed him for a while. There was a little bit of a lacrosse connection because his son played lacrosse. But I was still a little confused as to why he was there. That being said, it didn't ruin the game or anything like that. You know, they talked to him for a couple minutes and then they went on with the game and stuff like that. It was more kind of a, huh, what's going on here? Definitely nothing that, you know, got my blood boiling or anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. Let's kind of talk about a few of the many random guys in this game and how they actually played well. One guy, Justin Pugel, who's a defenseman for the Boston Cannons, and I'm sure about 10% of the viewing or listening public knows where he played, had the only good two-pointer of the game. Do you know where Pugel played? It's okay if you don't. It's okay if you don't. Stony Brook.
Oh.
Which I would have bet, like, my car that he's just another defenseman from Lemoyne that no one's heard of. And I cover D2 and D3 lacrosse and D1, so I was surprised. But played pretty well. Again, had that too. I think one of the things that stood out for me from this game is so many bad two-pointers. Just so many. Poles just addicted to taking twos in transition. And here's a little tip for goalies, especially in MLL because it's a yard out instead of PLL. Goalies, just drop them. Just drop. The pole's shooting low. The pole is not going high to high from that far out. Even if you don't know where the ball's going, you'll probably get a piece of it. Just drop. It's going to happen. That's my advice. I think this kind of snippet, though, is telling, because it seemed like they were really pushing to get Twos in Transition, almost as if it was like, hey, let's try to get more Twos in Transition. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. I do want to add that I think the two-point line is just one of the worst possible things to happen to a pro lacrosse all-star game.
Fair.
Not to pro lacrosse. I love the two-point line in pro lacrosse. But all-star game, it's just guys chucking these twos up left and right.
Yeah, and it's everyone also being like, well, let's fix the two-point line and make it work. And I was just kind of like, I had that discussion on Twitter on Monday where I was just kind of like, some rough twos out here, man. It's not great. And we'll get to PLL in a little bit. But in the MLL game, there was, I think, guys, the polls were like 1 for 10 on twos, and Pugles was the only one that went in. And it was a good shot, by the way. Sometimes the polls take shots and it gets like tipped or like their follow through is interrupted, so the ball releases. It's already hard to predict where the ball's going to go when a long pole is shooting, but when his stick is checked 3/4 of the way through his windup and he still gets velocity on the ball, like, it's so unpredictable for anything. Like, the goalie could have a beat on it and then he gets like a minor touch and it just goes in. I mean, last week Ryan Lee passed a ball in from the 2-point line for the Outlaws. So, like, that's kind of stuff happens. I think you see more of it in the MLL than the PLL, but I do think if the yard makes a difference, 16 versus 15, but it's still far enough that it's being a little abused, and we'll definitely get there. How did you feel about Rob Pinnell taking 12 shots in an All-Star game?
I'm of two minds about it. I do have to say this. So that strikes me as a large amount of shots in an All-Star game. But I was kind of excited and intrigued to see Rob Pinnell, and it looked like no complications to it or anything, but it just looked like he was having fun. And I don't feel like we've seen that all year. I don't think that's been a consistent thing from him. And I mean, I think there's obvious reasons why his sort of state of mind has been one that's been very, very carefully examined over, you know, ever since, you know, the past few months.
Yeah.
You know, you want to see where's this guy's head at? Is he 100% invested in this? Is he on his way out? Does he have 1 foot in, 1 foot out? Is he going to give it his all? Is he going to work with people? Is he, you know, he's got a basically a complete overhaul as far as people he's working with. Is this just going to be so frustrating for him? You know, there's a lot going on there. And it looked like he was having a great time. Like, you know, there's a play that they circulated on Twitter, you know, where I think Mark Cockerton buries the shot, but then you see Pinnell almost like dancing and running up to him to celebrate. And so I was like, hey, cool. It looks like Rob Pinnell is 100% having a great time. Now, the 12 shots is quite a few shots, but I think the thing I'm going to take away from this game is like, oh, man, hey, it looked like he was having a great time. Other things, like you mentioned some of the other guys who, more random guys, you mentioned Justin Pugel. I thought the two-pointer was great. I thought the finger guns that he dropped after scoring the two-pointer was triple great. That's the kind of thing I like seeing in some All-Star games. Just fires a shot, standing right at the goalie, bang, bang with some finger guns. Why not? Inject a little personality into it, and, you know, we know we're talking more about him right now than I assume we have the entire year. So I think that's a great thing that you can do in an All-Star game. I thought Rylan Reese was fantastic. Had a behind-the-back pass to set up a goal. You know, I think this was a game where a lot of face-off guys got to shine as well. You know, running down and scoring goals. You know, so I think there a few people really got to kind of take advantage, some of the lesser-known guys, in addition to the big names, like you mentioned, Rob Pinnell and Lyle Thompson, guys like that.
Yeah, I was impressed with a lot of the rookies. You know, Camizio here had a Camizio game in an All-Star game. 1 goal, 1 assist, 3 ground balls. Again, Rylan Reese had a goal, had 5 ground balls and 3 caused turnovers, and obviously Brendan Sunday of the Blaze and former Towson player, 4 goals, 1 assist, including the game winner. Any other guys kind of stand out for you before we kind of talk about the nature of All-Star games one more time?
Nobody else really jumps out, I think. I do have to say, obviously, this isn't a rookie or an unknown guy, but John Grant Jr. was legit sprinting on these rides.
Yeah.
And I did not assume that I was going to see that in an All-Star game. I also thought I'd see him playing for like a quarter or something like that. But he was just like, he was going at it the whole time. Like shoving a dude after a shot didn't go in and stuff like that. I mean, he was, I don't think there's like a 90 or an 80% or something like that for him. I think the whistle was, and he just kind of gave off. That definitely stuck out to me. Brendan Sunday. So Dylan Malloy had a fantastic game, but I feel like Sunday nailing the game winner might've been enough to give him MVP.
Yeah. Well, Malloy needs that 10 grand to fight the lawsuit when PLL sues him, so it'll be fine.
maybe they're just going to put that aside for or kind of like almost like a transfer, hey, thanks for coming sort of thing.
Yeah, thinking. No, it's nice. It was a nice thing that they did. That is just a joke. Don't get upset. I think one of the other things that I really liked here, and Brian Phipps, actually, the goalie for the Bayhawks, pointed this out, Lyle Thompson on the same line as John Grant Jr. Just phenomenal, right? Not that like attackmen play against each other, but you got to assume those guys have seen each other a fair amount, and I don't think I've ever seen them play together. So that was really cool. And I'll give credit for Fipper for pointing that out. That was, I thought about it as it was happening, but he really put it in perspective and I really enjoyed it. I really did. How does this All-Star game compared to past ML All-Star games, in your opinion? I feel like it was fun, but not overly amazing. So it's like nestled somewhere in the middle of the last 10 or so for me.
There's key moments I remember from All-Star games more than games themselves. Like, yeah. I remember the Charlotte ML All-Star game, and I can remember like Pete Poyon kind of weaving through everybody and scoring a goal. Yeah. And like, I remember Kevin Crowley kind of putting on a show, and I remember Will Manny, and then like the Team USA stuff from last year or whatever. But like, aside from sort of hallmark moments, I can't overemphasize how quickly I mentally synthesize and get rid of All-Star games. They are just gone as soon as I watch them.
Well, that's because All-Star games are for fans. They're not for us. Like, we're fans, but not in a way that, like, we know the All-Star game doesn't matter. So, like, it's really hard to bring the focus for it, which is definitely why I hired Zach Babbo to write it up instead of getting on a plane and going and doing it myself or asking you to do it on a Saturday night. It's not that it's not important to the league or everyone else. It's just hard to contextualize it when we've been doing game by game breakdown. Like, when was the last time a player was an All-Star game MVP and then a finals MVP in the MLL? I don't know. I don't think that's even happened ever. So I'm sure someone's got the record book out, if you can find it, and will let us know. But I don't think that's happened other than, actually, it might have happened with Paske, is the last one in 2011. I think that's the year he won MVP in the All-Star game and then won MVP of the finals. I don't know. I mean, parts of the game were really flowy and fun, but, other parts are rough and forced. There's almost too much transition, if that's possible, because most of the fast breaks devolved into, like I said, a trailing pole, taking a two, getting saved, and having the goalie chuck it over his head for another guy to take an ill-advised shot. That goalie saves it. I think in the second quarter, this happened 5 times in a row before someone scored. And I just went, come on, come on, come on. But like, it's not that it's bad. It's not that I'm hating on it. It's just like, it's an exhibition. It's not a game. I mean, it is, but it's not. No one got anything out of it except for Dylan Malloy getting 10 G's. And I'm sure the winning team got a higher bonus than the losing team. That's what I see it as.
Yeah, it's like a party, or, you know, it's like a barbecue you go to in the summer. Like, I don't think I've ever been to a summer barbecue that sucked. You know, I mean,
yeah.
unless something like, you know, unless like the place catches on fire or something like that, you know, right. it's a summer barbecue.
But you've also never been to a summer barbecue where like the winner of the three-legged race gets a check.
Right. That's true.
So somewhere in the middle. Right.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a party, you know, you have a good time. It looked like the players were having a lot of fun. You know, good for them. I mean, traveling all around and playing these games is probably a pretty substantial grind for a lot of these people, having to do it every weekend and stuff like that. Obviously, it's something that they want to do and, you know, that they're compensated for doing, but it nevertheless is, I'm sure, a grind, and, you know, especially if your team's not doing great or whatever. So it looked like a fun sort of event that they got to get together and in themselves, and it looks like the fans had a good time, everybody signing autographs. You know, awesome. All in all, it looked like a good party.
Any other parting thoughts before we move on to PLL?
Yes, breaking news courtesy of Denver Outlaws Twitter. Kyle Maher has been activated from the collegiate inactive list, and Eli Goldbrecht activated from the injured reserve. If I'm not mistaken, I think he broke his collarbone a while back, but this is kind of right on schedule when he was expected to return. And Mar, like you said, collegiate active, haven't seen him all season. Either of those strike you as either of those do anything for you?
I think Goldbrecht is actually a really big part of that defense, and him coming back, he's going to kind of patch up some of the rough play. I think he's one of the better two and three guys in terms of helping, sliding, hedging, kind of holding the defense together, being a glue guy back there. So I think that's it's bigger than it looks for him. As far as Kyle Maher, I mean, he's a shooter. You know, let him shoot. You got to give a shooter a shot in the pros to see what they can do. You know, kind of like a homeless man's Ryan Brown. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully it works out. All right, we are moving on to the PLL Weekend Recap. From Denver, should we, you know what, I'm going to start with this. Eric Law's cowboy mustache outfit, give me two sentences on it, please.
Okay, so I'm going to give you one word and one sentence. One word, phenomenal.
Okay.
One sentence, the number one thing on my top 10 this week.
All right. That's good. If you're really Denver, he should have worn like some sort of like hippie garb to like really bring it together, because downtown Denver is a lot of dudes that are really crunchy. So I don't know. It's fine. I needed to give you your little spotlight. I knew you were a fan. I kind of saw it and went, what the? Did he grow that mustache? He grew that mustache. Okay. All right. I'll give him that. He did it on purpose is kind of what I was like. Wait, did he do that by accident? Nope. He did that on purpose. Okay. Good for him. I like Eric Law a lot. Like, I no shots. I just saw it and was like, he did that on purpose. I'll give him credit. That's fine. Right?
Yeah. I think he did that. I mean, I need to get this verified, but I think he did that just to complete the ensemble, which is, I mean, just tremendous dedication.
Yeah.
I've never seen Eric Law with a mustache or facial hair.
Didn't know he could grow a mustache. I'm going to be honest with you. That's what really kind of took me aback. I've met Eric Law in person a few times. Never thought he could grow a mustache. But he did. Prove me wrong.
It's just dedication. It is the will and effort and determination to do so.
He can't hide from the law. All right. Bad puns aside, first game of the weekend, Atlas 18, Red Wings 15. I got to say, the Atlas, even though they won this, they almost blew it. Still managed to ride out a huge first half lead to a victory despite Jules Henningberg basically being unguardable for the Red Wings on the other side of the ball. I think the difference in this Atlas team, and especially in the first half from their past performances, is they did a great job of finally getting more touches to their attack, something they've kind of really struggled with through their losing streak and the games that they've lost. McCardle and Law, and again, Law playing in his hometown, wearing a awesome ensemble off the bus. Sure. I'm changing my words there. Were particularly excellent, and they combined for 9 points in the victory. The Redwoods defense, you know, everyone talks about the Redwoods defense being this great unit. I think they looked very out of sorts, but I think that's down to the Atlas hitting so many quick passes and dodging right off the catch to force a movement from that defense. Like, that Redwoods back line is so good when they can dictate action and teams go slow on them and they can hedge, throw a half slide. But they were caught out a lot because of the crisp and direct passing and dodging from the Atlas, this was the best Atlas game of the year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing that the Redwoods defense had a problem with, that any defense would, was like you mentioned, with the crisp passing. And when you get in a situation where, I mean, as cliche as it is, you know, when the ball is flying around faster than feet are moving, if you get in a situation like that, I think this is really where Eric Law shines, because he's probably, I'm just top of the head, probably the best in taking advantage of defense's balance issues. You know, if you're sliding and the slides are a little late, or if the field gets a little bit off balance, he is so good at finding those creases and, you know, ducking underneath somebody who's trying to recover, things like that, more so than, you know, pulling somebody out on the wing. Like, you're never going to confuse Eric Law's game for, like, Matt Kavanaugh's game. You know right. what I mean? Like, Kavanaugh wants to pull you out into the deep water and go for the wing dodges. Law wants to catch it, and then he's going to do one thing, and then you're done.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, this was definitely the atmosphere that he was going to thrive in. And, you know, when they had a man up sort of situation, they're just moving the ball so well. There was, you know, the defense, they just, their heads were spinning. They couldn't recover in time.
Yeah. Another note here for the Atlas. I thought Rabel played one of his best games so far, and he did it by not forcing stuff and letting Busick carry the shooter bucket. You know, I think the second half collapse of that lead might give the Atlas pause going forward. They did get outscored 9-4 in the second half, but this victory is a huge step forward for them. And, you know, kind of proof that attack line can work. I think what's one of the things we've questioned about them, you know, we were talking about maybe Kevin Rice being on that team eventually just to, like, have a different look, because a lot of those guys, it didn't seem like they were meshing. And in this game, they absolutely meshed. You had Law on one side of the net, McCardle on the other, and you had Brownie floating. And, you know, he didn't put up a crazy stat line, but you always have to pay attention to where Ryan Brown is. So that automatically takes you one guy out of your rotation, right? But you can't slide off of Ryan Brown. You just can't. Like, that's not something you can do if you've been doing your homework. So I think that you saw Law and McCardle really shine against their matchups, and also because of the pass. The passing was really good. I'm really impressed. On the other side, what do you think this means for the Redwoods? Because they looked awful in the first half. Truly one of the worst performances by an offense in the PLL so far.
Yeah, I mean, they got just flat out steamrolled just right out the gate. It was ugly, and it was gross, and it didn't look good. All in all, so I'm kind of the mindset where I would say this probably doesn't mean anything that much regarding the Redwoods moving forward. In a 16 league, I think it's inherently pretty tough, you know, especially with the talent levels, to beat a team twice. You know, I think we see that a little bit later as well. And so I think this is a situation where I think it's really going to come down to not so much talent or ability as it is coming down to working well together plus consistency, you know? Because, like, as far as, you know, the Atlas were struggling and stuff like that, but as much as they're struggling, the school of thought still isn't, you know, boy, you know, Ryan Brown sucks, you know, and, you know, like Connor Busick, that guy, he's terrible. It was more like, you know, these guys aren't working together and getting, you know, the maximum output. And, you know, so this game, you know, they had already, like, eclipsed their previous scoring totals after the first half. You know, they were firing on all cylinders in this game. So the question for them is, are they going to be able to replicate, you know, not even necessarily 18, but if they're never getting above 13 and, you know, they're dipping down into like, you know, single digits sometime, are they going to be able to get to, say, 15 on a consistent basis? And, you know, conversely, the Redwoods, if they get to 15 and lose and they looked like trash in the first half,
yeah,
you know, they're definitely going to walk away from this thinking, I think it's better to get blown out in the first half, at least from kind of a mentality standpoint, and fight back than have a, you know, good thing going and just, you know, burn it all away in the second half. So, I mean, I don't think there's too much to do as far as firing a panic switch for them yet.
I mean, do you want to talk about the Tucker Durkin-sized elephant in the room in this game or no?
Let's do it.
All right. Tucker Durkin was, I mean, listen, you're on replay. It's not lying. Like, Redwoods were going at him. When was the last time you saw a team pull Durkin one-on-one or run picks off him to go at him? Because I'm going to go with, well, it was probably 2 weeks ago with the Whipsnakes. But before that, before this year, right. Amend my question. Before this year, when was the last time you saw that?
Before this year, never.
Yeah, never. Never. I think part of the things that are happening in the PLL is, listen, the older guys are, this style of lacrosse does not reward age. It just flat out doesn't. I'm not saying everybody that's old is bad. I'm just saying, like, you're going to get attacked no matter who you are. And the Redwoods seem to really go at him in a way that I can't remember a team doing ever. So I think that's definitely something to watch. I don't think that he's a bad defender. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that I was surprised that a team like the Redwoods concentrated their effort to punish him and make him do his job. And in the second half, didn't do it that great. Not going to lie to you. I thought it was odd that Boyle kept talking about him and then saying how great he was, but then, like, on the third replay of him getting beat for a goal, like, kind of questioned him. And I kind of went, Boyle, like, dude, what if, do you want to talk about this or do you not want to talk about this? You know, it seemed like he kept mentioning his name, you know, not without reason, but in a way that kind of gave me pause a little bit. What did you think?
Yeah, so the kind of wild thing about this game that stood out to me as far as Durkin goes, and, you know, you mentioned the Whipsnakes, but, like, I think what it came down to in the Whipsnakes games was they just really like Rambo against Durkin.
Yeah, you know, that's
like,
true.
When it's Rambo versus Durkin, they've got their chips on Rambo, and they're like, yeah, he can handle this. You know, like, it's a physical matchup that Rambo, he like, thrives in that sort of thing. You know, he drops the shoulder.
He likes it.
He'll just bang with him, and he can do that. This game, the thing that stood out to me in this game about the Durkin matchup was, like, they had, you know, Durkin on Henningberg, and then Durkin goes over and covers Kavanaugh, and then when Kavanaugh gets the ball against him, he goes after him, too.
Yeah.
And that's what stood out to me. And so it wasn't just like, okay, they like this. It's like, these guys are kind of feasting like jackals when they're getting this matchup. And I mean, we've never seen that where these guys, you know, their eyes got big once he came on them, you know, like once he was moved over to that matchup. You know, generally, we're kind of used to seeing it like, okay, all right, you know, I don't want any trouble. And then you just pass it and somebody else handle it, right?
Yeah.
But this one, like, Kavanaugh, once he got the matchup, he was like, all right, let's go. And, I mean, he's a confident guy, but we have not seen that sort of embrace of the Durkin matchup.
No. I think it's just something to watch. I don't think it's a indication of anything across the board. But let's just say I'm looking at some stats this week for possible future pieces that we'll get to later on the podcast. Second PLL contest of the weekend, the Chaos 13, the Whipsnakes 12, Chaos Avenge, and overtime loss to the Whipsnakes earlier this season. This was the best game of the weekend for me out of all four of them. Perfect combination of physicality, speed, and balanced goal scoring. I really, really enjoyed it. And for me, the best part of the PLL is that every week that league cranks out at least one game like this that ticks all the boxes. And on great weekends, they tick. There's three games that do this. But this one was this game this week. Great games from Demir Klass with a hat trick, fulfilling his role as the mid-range set shooter, and Connor Fields here for the chaos. Fields finished with 2 and 3. You know, had 5 turnovers, forced a few dives towards the end, but I feel like he more than made up for it with his playmaking. I gotta say, I have no idea why Fields was being guarded by Muller and not Dunn or Young. That makes no sense to me. And I kept watching it and being like, why is he guarding him? Like, Fields wants that. Why don't you switch? Like, I would switch Dunn onto him, and if Dunn couldn't muscle him out, I would put Young on him and shut him. I didn't understand what they were doing there. What did you see with that matchup?
Yeah, I mean, initially I would have guessed that Dunn would get that matchup. It seemed to me like they really wanted to emphasize kind of having Young sort of do a lot more of the sort of free range roaming sort of stuff. You know, he's like lining up on the wing, kind of, you know, leading the breaks sometimes, you know, more of an LSM kind of role than we're used to seeing him take on with this defense. But yeah, I mean, my guess would have been Dunn initially.
Yeah. Which is odd because, like, you know, Thompson didn't play this week. Neither Thompson played this week. So Miles or Jeremy. So that's why I was perplexed, because Bocklet's in there. Bocklet's not going to carry that ball 20 yards or 10 yards and try to dice you up. Like, that's the guy Muller is good on. Fields is going to do exactly that and did do that. Although, listen, it's not like Muller did an awful job, but 5 points from Fields is pretty good. I just, that matchup befuddled me. For the Whips, I mean, Chris, your boy, Ryan Drenner, popped in 4 goals to lead them in scoring. Is it fair to say that Rambo was quote-unquote limited with a goal and 2 assists here? I don't think he played that bad. He had 4 turnovers. Fields had 5 again. So rough to, like, parse that. But it's clear the game plan was to stay on Rambo and not slide off him, right?
Yeah, and I think it is definitely fair to say he was limited. You know, he usually kind of sets the offensive tone and forces the defense to adjust, but this game felt more like him operating under the confines of what the defense was providing. And also, I think it was probably the most consistently frustrated I can recall seeing him this season, not just like performance wise, but, you know, you're seeing shots of him like yelling at the refs, or, you know, towards the end of the game, Michael Earhart took a deep, deep shot in transition, and you can see him throwing up his hands afterwards. You know, like, it just kind of seemed like it was kind of boiling up throughout the game in that regard. And that might have been a result of how he was feeling about how he was producing, you know, in his own play that day. I think it was exactly what was setting it off. But yeah, I would definitely say it's fair to say he was limited.
Yeah. Looking through kind of the other stuff from this game, Whipsnakes, I feel like, they came back. They outscored the Chaos 3-1 in the fourth quarter. Chaos, not great in the fourth quarter. That's going to be the one kind of notch there. They still managed to gut it out. But just watching them, their midfield didn't really deliver a lot of playmaking. You know, the leading assist guys on this squad from the midfield, it was Joe Nardella. That's not good. That's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut it. You need to have a guy that can draw a slide and pass. They have tons of guys that can draw a slide. The problem is they draw the slide and shoot through the slide. And I think they're going to look back through that. And this is another team that leans a lot on their defense to make stops and get transition goals. And they did that. But the only other team that's better at that is the Chaos, and kind of made them pay for it. Matt Reese here with 2 goals in transition for the Chaos. Jarrod Newman obviously hitting another 2 ball. Just incredible. Do you know what I found out this week?
What's that?
Jarrod Newman has only been playing lacrosse for 7 years. He walked on to Providence.
So he... Wow.
How does that feel? How does that hit you?
I mean, so he was just kind of like, oh, all right, lacrosse, this looks like fun. I'll try that.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And okay. Now he's got the fastest shot in the world. It's one of the better transition pulls. Very physical. I think one of the things like that also happened in this game that I want to talk about is we're not hitting those moving picks, refs. We're not. But if you set a pick and you stick your foot out and the defender hits the foot and slows down, that's a moving pick. Like, you're already set. You have to stay set. They didn't call it, and they, you know, Whips got a goal back because they didn't call that on Newman, and Newman was upset with the ref, and he should have been. I think that's something you got to watch for incoming games for the PLL as a whole, is those refs really need to tighten up on the moving picks, because it not only happens deep and behind the cage, it happens in the middle of the field where guys run across each other on purpose to slow down another guy when they're going to the box. Technically a moving pick. Technically a moving pick. Sorry. It just is. I don't think that's going to get called a lot, but I just wanted to call some attention for it before we moved on. One last thing. I want to say, I think these are the two most exciting teams in the league. And after watching all the other games this weekend, I now believe that the Chaos and the Whipsnakes are the two best teams in the league. What are your thoughts?
I think so. I think when I watched this game, when it was over, I definitely thought, okay, so I'm not going to be surprised to see this matchup later on. You know, this is a postseason or championship matchup. Definitely won't be surprised if these two end up as the last two teams standing. But speaking of kind of postseason, I wonder if the Whipsnakes were a little bit rattled. You know, we were kind of talking about Rambo, and I mentioned being frustrated. They could have clinched this, you know, the win here, and you know, they would have been the first team to do so in PLL history.
The playoffs, you mean?
Right, yeah, a clinch a playoff spot. They would have, I mean, you know, I don't know how much that sort of thing matters to them, or if they came out a little tight based on that, but like, they had the chance to take out the Chaos when they're missing two starting attackmen. And you know, it's a testament to the Chaos that they pulled off the win despite no Byrne and no Thompson. But I mean, man, I bet the Whipsnakes are a little mad about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a missed opportunity for them. But again, you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if this was the championship matchup. Let's go to the third game. Ugh. Archers 9, Chrome 7. The first half was fun. Connor Farrell exploding for the first goal 6 seconds in was great. Tom Schreiber scoring what should have been the go-ahead goal with 7 seconds left in the half, also great, only to be topped by Jordan McIntosh scoring one of his two goals, streaking through the middle and beating the clock to tie it up before halftime. That's where the good things end. The second half of this game was a horror show of turnovers. Now, you could say that this was due to an increased defensive presence from both teams, and I wouldn't fight you on it. But you have to acknowledge some of the sloppiness here from the ball carriers, the playmaking. Everyone was trying to make home run passes and not hitting them. It was rough. Like, a lot of pulls got some easy cause turnovers, just picking off some not-so-great passes. On the Archer side, Kevin Rice did not dress for this game. Instead, Christian Cuccinello gets the nod down low. We've talked about Kevin Rice, and now it's because he's sat a game, it's evolved into a Rice situation. Chris, what do you make of it?
Cuccinello draws Mike Manley, scores two goals. I mean, the whole team scored 9 goals total, and 2 of those were Marcus Holman two-pointers, right? So it's not like, you know, they were just lights out on offense. But conversely, Kevin Rice has 3 goals this season. So,
right.
I mean, it's wild that somebody with his resume isn't even going to dress in this, you know, in this sort of situation. But it's also impossible to argue that doing so, you know, that like keeping him out hurt the team. You know, they won. They've been struggling for a significant period of time here. So, I mean, they had somebody. Obviously, Cuccinello and Rice play very, very different styles. And, you know, they kind of occupy different spots down at the attack. But, you know, I would say his contributions certainly seemed to work out better. Now, that being said, more than anything, it does make getting rid of Jared Ragonese and a 4th-round pick for Joey Sankey look kind of questionable if, you know, Sankey's not going to be there either. Right. You know, I mean, if you're not playing Raganese, it's whatever. You know, because, you know, you've got your face-off situation taken care of. But giving up a pick, you know, next year, I mean, are you going to bench Cuccinello, you know, who just had the two? Are you going to bench him for Sankey, like, you know, 2 weeks from now when they start back up?
I don't think you can. I think they're different players. Sankey is more like Holman and Manny than Cuccinello is like Holman and Manny. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
So what you're getting with Cuccinello is a bigger body, a guy that can pull a guy out and beat him with speed and power, and can, I mean, he's not inverting because now he's an attackman, but if you pull him to the wing and you get a switch, that's what he likes. You know, that's what he did all last year for the Blaze. That's why he was good. So it doesn't surprise me. I think what surprised me is that, you know, there's not a lot of production here from the midfield for the Archers. Like, they won, so I don't want to be like, oh, you hate the Archers. They had 3 goals from the midfield. Not great. Not great. And Tom Schreiber had 2 of them. It's a team that is built on the concept of team, not playing like a team and still winning. And really, it's because Holman hit two pointers. Otherwise, the game's tied and goes to overtime. You know, like, that's just how it goes. That's how the numbers shake out. I think one of the key moments here, tied at 7s in the 4th. Chrome looked to be the better team, beating their man, getting shots. But Drew Adams coming in, splitting time with Gittleman, making multiple incredible stops to shut the door. And then ultimately the game is won by goals from Cuccinello and Schreiber in the final 7 minutes. The 2 goalie situation, which we questioned more than once in this podcast, finally paying dividends here. What do we think about it?
I will continue to question it because I still don't love it. Like, isn't one goalie better than the other goalie? Like, and doesn't that goalie, if you can identify one goalie who is better, doesn't that goalie deserve to play the entire game? Like, I just feel like the defense of this strategy has to be that one half of Gittleman plus one half of Adams is somehow better than 2 halves of either one. And I'm not exactly sure what the reasoning and, like, you know, logic or anything behind that would be. It's kind of like the old thing about, you know, like the airplane with the black box. Well, just why don't you make the whole plane out of the black box? You know, like, I don't get the benefit of bench. You know, like, I mean, like, yeah, I don't get him and have like 6 saves in the first quarter or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
great.
He was playing very well, but, you know, he's going to get yanked because you already decided ahead of time that he's going to get yanked. And it works out well in this particular situation because Drew Adams made those great saves. But, you know, like, what if it didn't work out well? You know, like, it seems like a very unnecessary tightrope to walk every week and then, you know, retroactively acknowledge as a good or bad thing depending on the result of the game. You know what I mean? Like, if the Chrome, if they can manage double-digit scoring, like, which is reasonable to think, you know, a team
is
can
it,
do.
Is it?
I said a team, you know, just a collection of people. You know, double digits happens more often than not, right, in the league. So if you go against the team and they can get to 10, then in this situation, they would have won the game. And, you know, where are we then with the whole Adams thing? You know, is Adams does he have a shorter leash than Gittleman because he's in the second half? You know, if he gives up more goals, you know, are you worried about why he's still in there? I don't know. I mean, it just seems like a nightmare to me personally, and it doesn't seem like the recipe for something great, but that's just the side I fall on it.
So here's my defense of it. They are 2 completely different goalies. That's the and one of the things that I think we've seen work in this kind of, you know, this is a young league. You got to try new things to have success. And once you try them and they work, you keep doing them till they don't. I think switching goalies switches the game plan for the other team sometimes. And anytime you can dictate any sort of level of the game by a substitution or something like that, you do it. And I think that it brings an element, not necessarily of surprise, but of difference, because you spend, you know, 24 minutes shooting on one guy, and now you kind of get a rhythm for that. You figure out like, okay, he's not so great here, or your scout is, he's not great here. And then the team throws another guy at you and you're like, all right, well, now I have to remember what two goalies do and what their tendencies are and where I should be on the field and what they do in the clear and how to ride this goalie versus this goalie. Because Drew Adams and Adam Gittleman play completely differently. One of them's shorter, one of them's taller, one of them's better low, one of them's better high, one plays switch hand, one plays dominant hand, one plays high arc, one plays low arc. They couldn't be more different. They're still good. But I think the strategy here is like, I don't know if either one of them is better than the other. I think the best attribute they both have is that they're so different. And you throw that at a team, even if the team's prepared for it, you're already in your shooting motion most of the time anyway. You're shooting without thinking. So to you, like, the goalie doesn't matter sometimes if you're shooting the ball and you're having a good game. But other guys, you know, there are guys on all these teams that are struggling. And now you have to throw another thing that they have to remember at them. I don't know. I think it works to a certain point. I don't think it works every game. And I think that it can be exploited the other way as well, if guys are ready to take advantage of the weaknesses of those two goalies and identify them. But I don't hate it as much as I did. I understand your point, and you have good points. I'm coming down on a little bit of the opposite side of the coin. I kind of like what it does for them. That being said, the Chrome just shot themselves out of this game. Just flat out. You got your midfield guys on the midfield. We were talking about it before the podcast, but like, you've got 20 shots here from guys in the midfield at least, and all you've got to show for it is 3 goals. It's bad. It's bad. Two guys combined for 12 shots and 0 points, or 1 assist, sorry. That's awful. It's awful. You got too many black holes in this team. It's just a fact. You got to move some guys to different positions, and there's a lot of guys here that can play different positions, but there also is a lot of guys here that like to go to their spot and get their shot off. And they're not working well with each other. And I think that's kind of something that needs to be addressed in the huddle if the Chrome are going to bounce back. They're 1-6. 1-6. I mean, if the Whipsnakes could have clinched, when are the Chrome out? Next week? Week after? I mean, it's a bye week this week, but you know what I mean? Like, when are they out? Soon, right? 6 losses is bad. 7 is worse. 8, I think 8 gets you out. So I think we got to watch that, and we have to watch what this team does, because they played pretty good in the first half and then truly atrocious in the second. And, you know, got their 6th loss as a result. We are going to move on to our big question, which we promise we're going to do this week. We actually have 2 of them. One thing we want to do is not a question, it's just to tell you guys, we are embarking on a piece that has been assigned to us by our leader, Matt Kinnear. And that piece is Chris and I's thoughts on who the 20 best players in professional lacrosse are at this moment in time. Chris, how do we feel about this?
I feel like I should just go ahead in advance and RIP both of our mentions.
Oh God!
Right now,
I didn't even think about it. Oh.
Yo, yeah, yeah. It's probably going to be messy.
probably.
Yeah. Probably. We'll see.
To be fair, we're being forced to do this. We both know that we don't want to do it, and we know the repercussions of it are not great. But we're going to do it because we do our jobs, regardless of how it's going to really ruin our weeks. So look for that soon. I'm going to say soon. I'm not going to give you a day. We're going to tease it out. We're going to say soon. But we have a fun audience interaction component for this week. You've heard us mention before in the podcast that Chris and I like to combine our ideas, crazy or not crazy, throughout the year, kind of the first part of the season, and then kind of ride it out and see which ones we like the most and which ones we're going to turn into articles that are like, the best example of this is probably the Space Jam article, but also my favorite one that we've done is the Every Team as a Val Kilmer Movie article. You can check those out on Inside the Cross. Just search Chris Rosenthal and Kyle Devitt, and a bunch of them will pop up. So what we do is we have a list of future article ideas. And what we're going to do now on the podcast is read them out to you. Chris, why don't you do the first one listed and we'll alternate? And you guys, the listeners, you get to vote on Twitter which ones we're going to do next week.
All right, so the first one we have here is PLL teams as Michael Bay movies. Michael Bay, you might know him from some of his works, like Transformers, all 42 of those movies.
Yes.
Armageddon, Bad Boys, did he do?
Bad Boys and Bad Boys 2.
Yep. Yeah. His cattle is extensive and tremendous, and a lot of solar flares and explosions.
Yep.
And you're aware of the PLL teams, so you know, find the corresponding ones as they should be.
The second option is MLL teams as David Fincher movies. David, a little darker, a little more realistic than Michael Bay movies, and actually they went to school together and they hate each other, which is why I thought this idea was amazing and I love it. David Fincher, director of such illustrious films as Zodiac, Gone Girl, Alien 3, Seven, and Fight Club. So lots of fun there to play with. I don't know which team's going to be Gone Girl, but I am writing that one.
That is gritty, that, gritty and dark.
Gritty and dark, dark, which I'm excited for. Chris, what's the third one?
So this one, I don't know if we have to like go to a bank and get a loan or something like this. This one's got some legs to it. This one you might remember, NBC Dateline, Making a Murder of a Blowout. You know, I think we, it was kind of kicked around that we might have had a nominee this past weekend.
Yeah,
the Redwoods, they fought back valiantly.
Yep.
And kind of got off that nomination list. So I guess we'll have to look through and find just the most lopsided games, or maybe make it about like a half or something like that. But yeah, the third nominee is Dateline, Making a Murder.
Yes. Basically just doing an article in the style of a Dateline, but it has to be a blowout. So, like, you know, you have to have that sad denouement at the end. That's just key. You just need it. Watch some Dateline. Ask your parents. They know what it is. I feel like this is definitely Chris's idea, but it's my turn to tell you what it is. It's awesome. MLL, I guess, or PLL teams as limited edition Oreos, which I think we all know is in Chris's wheelhouse. He has a whole rating system. I'm sure he's got a whiteboard or a corkboard with all those red strings connecting it in some sort of conspiracy to the regular Oreo. But I think that's on the table as well. Any comment on that?
No, I mean, I think that's pretty much it. I think that's pretty much is what it is. You got your teams, you got your Oreos.
Yep.
And I think this is the last one. Conversely, this is we have
one. There's one more at the end that I saved. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. So this one, Team Short Guys versus Team Tall Guys. You know, we're going to make some all-star teams of guys who, you know, who are not that tall versus guys who are significantly taller, and see if we can field some competitive teams and see who would ultimately turn out the winner.
So this is originally an idea that I kicked around with Patrick McEwen, and the cutoff we came up for short guys is anyone under 5'9", and for tall guys you have to be 6'2" or over. So 5'9" and under, 6'2" and over to make each one of those teams. The challenge with this one is that it's like 80% of lacrosse players are in the middle, which is especially pro guys. So it'll be tough, but I think that one will be fun. And the final one here that we have, it's really less of an article than an idea. Chris and I were going to make PLL fan accounts for Twitter and see how long it took for them to DM us. We're obviously not going to do that because we just spoiled it. But we figured we'd just kind of kick it out to you guys. So you can't vote for that one. It's more like a bonus. But maybe we can work something out and you can help us with it. So again, just to go through those options, we'll put this poll on Twitter up on Wednesday with the podcast. PLL teams as Michael Bay movies. MLL teams as David Fincher movies. NBC Dateline making a murderer of a blowout win or loss. MLL teams or PLL teams as limited edition Oreos. And team short guys versus team tall guys. So we'll put that option up on Wednesday when the podcast drops. And if you have any ideas for that last one to get going, you know, hit us up. We're always here to be added to a certain point. Do you want to tease out any of the top 20 guys we have?
I feel like generally speaking, I feel like there's a decent amount that people can guess.
Yeah.
I feel like they might be surprised by a few and surprised by a few who aren't there as well. Not to sound like controversial or anything like that, but, you know, I think it's about 50-50. You know, they got probably 10 that they're certain of. And then,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Would you like to give them a couple, or you want to just keep it all fresh?
Let's do one each. And I'm going to say this. Facts aren't mean. Okay. If your favorite, you know what? I saw this thing. I saw this post on Twitter by one of my favorite. He's a writer now, but he was a film critic. He wrote Doctor Strange. His name is C. Robert Cargill. And he said he was having a conversation with a guy who does voiceovers for trailers and always like for movie trailers and always puts his all into it. And he's like, why are you doing that for like really awful movies and movies that like even the trailer's bad? And the guy said to him, every movie is someone's favorite movie. And I think that applies to pro lacrosse players. Every pro lacrosse player is someone's favorite pro lacrosse player, you know? So I think, you know, kind of with that in mind, that's how I'm going to attack this list. Like, you got to earn it. You got to earn it to be on here. And we're picking from both leagues. I think it's pretty obvious that one league is going to have more people than the other. But I do think there's probably going to be a lot of guys that are going to surprise you. And I'm going to name one right now that I think is probably not as obvious, and we both have him. And even after this, especially after this weekend, I think, you know, it's Bryce Young is on here from the Whipsnakes for me. So I think, you know, that's kind of where we're coming from. We're looking at multiple positions. It's not just attack. It's not just midfield. Although there probably will be more attack than midfielders. Sorry. There's at least one goalie and at least one faceoff guy. So get off our backs. All right. It would be much easier to do this list if we could do it by position. And also, if you're looking for that, check out our Team of the Week every week for each league on InsideTheCross.com. Chris, pick a guy on here that we agree on is going to be on the list, but that people probably aren't expecting.
Let me see. So I do want to preface it by saying this, which is something I do think is kind of cool about this. We weren't given any rules to this.
Facts.
As far as like, you know, ranking systems or anything like that. Like, and also we're doing them completely independently of one another and then kind of merging them together. I guess we'll, you know, like weigh each pick or something like that. So I think that's cool too. This is, you know,
yeah.
However you figure it out and however I figure it out, we'll, come to our decisions. But I do think it's cool that we have the freedom here. Let me see here. Let me check your list and make sure. Yeah, so if you have only been paying attention to PLL, you may not be super aware of what Brian Cole has been doing.
Yep.
So I will mention him. He is on our list for the Blaze. It's been doing tremendous work. And we both have him pretty decently ranked as far as how high up it goes. You know, this is all still going to kind of be fluid and keep moving around. But yeah, right now he's pretty decently ranked on both of our lists.
All right. And with that, we're going to transition to the end of the show and go to our recommendation of the week. I'm going to go first this week. Way less dark than last week. So, yay. Midweek, I went to Memphis for a work event, a city that I've never been to, and hung out for one night with a bunch of lacrosse people. It was incredible. So my recommendation, and this is kind of more towards the older crowd, but I feel like the millennials, you got tools that can get you anywhere you want now, you know, with Airbnb and, you know, cheap flights and apps that tell you when things are the cheapest. My recommendation is go to a random city you always wanted to visit with another person or a group of people that you enjoy hanging out with, and literally go nuts for 24 hours. It's really an underrated experience because there are so many options out there. And like I said, it's, even though it's the summer, flights are cheap to certain areas. Just maybe you've like saw a city, you're like, oh, I've never been to Spokane. Let's go there. And you and a bunch of your friends go there and you find a cheap flight, you know, spend the money you saved on the flight on a decent hotel for maximum enjoyment. That's what we kind of did. Stayed at the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, which is, in my opinion, the best part of Memphis. It was awesome. They have ducks that live in the building that they walk through an elevator and a red carpet up to a cage that they're kept in overnight at night and then walk down in the morning. And it's like a ceremonial thing. And it's somehow related to hunters, but very tangentially. I can't really describe it, but again, it's one of those weird things that I experienced that was fun and unexpected. So, you know, get a group of your friends together, go do something fun in a random city you've never been to. It's the ultimate escapism. Check that out. Chris, what do you got?
So this week I have a recommendation for people out there looking to do their civic patriotic duty while also continuing to spoil their teeth and diets with candy. Go to your local 7-Eleven or a Wawa. Those are the places I can personally vouch have them set up, but I'm sure there's some other stores somewhere. And look for it's a yellow display. It's like this giant cardboard display, probably about 5.5 feet high. USO candy donations. You can get your red, white, and blue M&Ms there, get these America blend Skittles, all this kind of, you know, patriotic candies. And you get them from that particular stand, and, you know, the specially marked display, very difficult to miss it. And a dollar from each of your purchase, each bag of candy you purchase goes straight to the USO and all the good stuff they do entertaining the troops. So, you know, go there if you're going to buy some candy and you're going to be in one of those places anyway, pick up some candy there. And if your friends or loved ones want to sit you down and they're like, hey, we're kind of concerned about how much candy you're eating lately, just tell them that you are supporting the troops and then ask them if they have a problem with the troops and make them feel bad and tell them to go get some candy as well. So, you know, just support America and support candy.
The IO Pro Lacrosse Podcast, not for dentists. Sorry. Another great food recommendation from Rosie to close it out. My name is Kyle Devitt. You can find me on Twitter at TheKyleDevitt. Chris, where can they find you?
You can find me at ChrisRosie22.
Thanks for listening. Check back next week, and don't forget to vote in the poll for which article we're going to do next.